separate occasions. Yet he couldn't end her own. "I wonder if she always travels with so many guards," Blaze said. He shut the door behind them and gazed at its iron handle.
"I expect so," Dante said, the first words he could remember saying since the square.
"The priests, could you tell? They were all swole up with the same power you've got."
"Some of them. There's a stillness around the ones who do. A heaviness."
"Maybe it was for the best, then," Blaze said. "They probably could have told it was you."
"Probably," Dante said, and wasn't consoled.
They burned a week, walking endless circles through the dead city, scouting the sealed citadel for ways inside, waiting for open gates, searching for tricks of passage. Every time the doors opened and the grill raised, 40 armed men watched the entry of the man they had parted the gates for. Wagons were searched before they were allowed through. They saw nothing more of Samarand, heard of no other sermons or appearances. They could bribe their way in, perhaps, or try to scale the towering walls by cover of night. But the keep was a city to itself, and even if they stood inside the courtyard, they'd have no way to find the woman priest within its alien lairs. Every measure seemed too desperate, its hopes far too trivial to risk their lives for. They killed the rest of their long hours sifting through the rubble in the outer regions of the city, kicking around the trash of houses for anything they could use or sell. It was a tedious business, dirty and exhausting, and they did it in their rough old clothes. At 4 hours a day, they found more to sell than they spent on food, enough to keep themselves alive. Dante rose each day feeling hollowed out, torn open. He'd missed his chance, and as time raced on, time that surely saw the spread of unrest and death in their homes in the south, he saw no way to amend this mistake. His weakness. It had been a single moment, but it had confirmed every fear and close-held hate for himself he'd ever felt. He thought of nothing else, knew his life from now till death would be defined by the single minute when he'd thought himself strong, but found himself wanting. Whatever else he'd done well or done right meant nothing. Blaze's attachment to him was hollow. His skill with the nether, a talent he'd once allowed himself to think would one day enshrine him in immortal glory, that was a sham, a delusion. There was only his failure, that non-act that loomed cyclopean from his memory, sharper and more crippling than any wound to his body. He began to wish he'd never existed. He daydreamed of standing at the foot of a hill and being consumed by the damp, cool dirt, leaving no trace of himself on the stupid earth. By night he found some small comfort, losing himself in his books. Dense works, dripping with intricate thought and elevating efforts of logic. It was a week before he finished the three he'd found in that abandoned temple on their first day within Narashtovik. The day he finished the last of the tomes, he and Blaze walked the roads between the two sets of walls until they found another edifice bearing the marks of Aron, and none of recent use. Dante combed its floors and shelves for more books with which to salve his mind. And there, among the rubble and the ruin, at last he found the answer.
This audiobook has been broken into multiple parts to make the download faster. You have reached the end of a part, but not the end of the complete audiobook. So please check your library for the next part of this audiobook.
Audible hopes you have enjoyed this program.
This is Audible.
Podium Publishing presents The Cycle of Aron, The Complete Trilogy. Written by Edward W. Robertson. Read by Tim Gerard Reynolds.
Chapter 14. "Here's your damned book," Dante said, flipping the Cycle of Aron at the feet of one of the priests they'd found inside the Cathedral of Ivars. The bald man raised an eyebrow at its sprawled pages.
"A copy of the cycle," he said, replying in Malish. "Shall I add it to the 100 others in the cellars?"
"Not a copy," Dante said. "The copy." The priest glanced at him, then at the book on the floor, then shot Dante a sharper look. His shoulders jerked at the cold defiance on the boy's face. The priest tripped on the skirts of his robe as he went to snatch up the book. He cupped it with both palms, the white tree of Bardon shining up at his face. A tall, willowy priest, silent till now, leaned over his shoulder to gaze on its cover.
"Dante Galland," the bald priest said, and Dante willed his face to keep composed. "Why have you decided now to return it to its proper owners?"
"I've read it all," Dante said, tossing his head. "Besides, I'm tired of killing your men." "It's not even sporting anymore," Blaze added from his side.
"You wouldn't know a real man if you were staring straight at his kneecaps, boy,"
the tall priest spoke down to them.
"You think so little of Will Palomar," Dante said through curled lips. "We slew him too, you know."
"Will's not dead," the tall man said.
Blaze burst into laughter.
"Is he?"
"He hasn't come back yet," the bald priest said, meeting the other's eyes. They turned back to the boys.
"No. Boyish fancy. What are you, 12?
"Almost 16, Blaze said.
"Our friend robbed the corpse of his male shirt," Dante said. "We thought his cape too womanly to take."
The tall priest gasped. The bald one beetled his brows.
"I assume," he said, voice measuredly soft, "you didn't come all this way to let us know we need to order another tombstone."
Dante nodded, body as tight as a bowstring. It all hinged on their reaction to his next words.
"I can't read that gibberish in the back," he said. "I want to know what the rest says."
"There's a nice long section about the tragedy of outgrowing one's britches," the bald priest spat.
"I don't remember that verse,"
the tall one said. The first priest blinked at him. Dante folded his arms.
"I'm joining your order. I want a cell in the Citadel, access to your archives, a tutor who knows enough to be of use to me."
"We'll give you a cell." The bald priest licked his pudgy lips. "A nice, dank one, with good, thick walls to keep you safe."
"You'll do as I say," Dante warned, stepping forward until his nose was an inch from the priest's. "You'll give me my books, my lessons, the knowledge I still lack, and I'll release your god from his chains in the heavens."
"You're a rat's asshole," the tall man said.
He splayed out his hand. In the same moment, Dante met the priest's nether with his own, and Blaze's sword whipped up to dimple the man's throat. His Adam's apple bobbed against the killing steel.
"Put your weapon down," the bald priest said, and for the first time his eyes were bright with fear. "And you step back, Paul. I've heard enough to know he's not as weak as he looks."
The priest named Paul spread his fingers in peace and lowered his hands to his waist. Blaze kept the blade at his neck. He twitched his hand, and a tiny rivulet of blood leaked down Paul's skin. Paul suppressed a whimper. Blaze snorted, lowered his sword.
"There," the bald priest said, folding his hands below his chin. "All right, let's calm down and think about this for a minute.
Think about me gutting you like a trout if you try one of your little spells again, Blaze said, twitching the point of his sword at Paul's belly.
Like a flounder for him, Dante said, pointing to the bald one. It's fatter.
And think about me gutting you like a flounder.
I said, let's calm down, the bald priest said, shuffling the anger from his face and waiting till Blaze put away his blade. The man took a long, slow breath and gazed around the small living quarters in the back of the cathedral where the boys had ambushed them.
This is beyond my authority, he decided, nodding so the wattles on his neck ruffled like a lace sleeve.
Paul, go see Larimore and tell him the boy has come. Tell him he's brought us the book.
And then what? Dante said, pointing his chin at the bald priest's sternum.
And then he'll figure out what to do with you, he said through his teeth.
Blaze's sword ground against its sheath as he worked free the first half foot.
Which I'm certain will be peaceable and amenable to both parties.
He fixed Blaze with a look.
They'll appreciate you've returned our property without any more bloodshed.
What are you waiting for, Paul? Blaze said. Move your bony ass.
The bald priest fought a smile as Paul hustled from the room.
Blaze glanced at Dante and bugged his eyes. Dante fought down a laugh that would have unmasked them both.
They snapped their faces flat and dully contemptuous as the priest turned back to them.
What's your name? Dante said. Nack Randall, the bald priest said.
He nodded to Blaze.
And yours? We never learned your name. We'd taken to calling you the Pain.
Dante saw Blaze swallow a grin.
Blaze Buckler, he said.
Nack sucked his cheeks and darted his watery eyes between the two boys for any sign they were putting him on.
Blaze didn't need to act to make his face go red.
Very well, Nack nodded quickly. Dante Galland and Blaze Buckler. You've come a long way.
We heard of your city's legendary hospitality, Dante said.
Thought we'd see it for ourselves, Blaze said. I hope it hasn't disappointed, Nack said, wiping something from his eye and examining his nail.
Someone shot at us on the way in, Blaze shrugged. It's been better since.
Nack nodded. It might have helped to learn the language. Things are a bit bestirred at the moment, but some of the city's wary of foreigners.
Dante snorted.
We've been a little busy being snuck up on in the night by Samaran's hounds to work on our education.
I suppose that's true, Nack said. He crinkled up his face and rubbed his eyes with one hand.
Things are going to get interesting a few minutes from now. Care for a seat until then?
Thanks, Blaze said, thunking into a chair.
Dante took the one beside him, and Nack bent over the last one in the room and dragged it in front of them.
He sighed as he sat down, then laughed, shaking his bald head.
They are not going to like this.
Too bad, Blaze said.
Nack crossed one leg over the other, wincing when his slippered toe snagged on his robe.
Trouble with your feet, Dante said.
Bunions, Nack said sadly, then looked up, faintly embarrassed.
He frowned hard at Dante.
Speak like that to Larimore, and he'll either kill you on the spot or take to you like a duck to water.
Lots of non-duck fowl like the water, Dante said.
What?
Who's Larimore?
Blaze said before Dante could expound.
He's known as the Hand of Samaran,
Nack said with a hint of irony around his mouth, because he turns her will into something you can grasp.
He's a priest, then, Dante said, leaning forward. Just a man with an uncommon facility for getting things done. If he weren't so damned good at it, you can bet one of the council would have stilled his restless tongue a long time ago. Thus why he might actually like you two.
Dante cocked his head. If he's that good, maybe his arrogance is accurate.
Even if that were granted, Nack said, folding his robed arms, he still lacks the wisdom to realize that fortress over there may be jammed with holy men, but it's no less a court than the palace in the capital, where respect and obedience are the highest virtues of all.
I thought the winters up here were supposed to be cold, Blaze interjected, cutting Dante off once again and refusing to return his annoyed look.
Nack swiftly took this turn of the verbal crossroads, allowing it had been unseasonably warm, in fact the mildest winter he could remember from the last 20 years. He was still telling Blaze about all the people who had died during last winter's blizzard, when the door swung open, and a thin, sharp-boned man, with the light brown face of one of the Marl Islanders from the sea south of Bressel, strode into the room. Two guards bearing sheathed swords followed at his heels.
Paul took up the rear, eyes locked straight ahead, as if he were afraid where they might land if he let them free.
"Nice of you to return our book," the sharp-boned man said, glancing between Blaze and Dante as they stood. "It would have been a little less trouble if—"
"You're Larimore, then," Dante said, taking in the man's unfashionably short black hair, the tears and stains to his thick, fine-stitched cloak. His boots looked like they had been once worth more than all Dante owned, including his life, but had since been scuffed and worn to the point where they resembled the bark of a pine. His black gloves and scabbard were the same. The only thing he wore with any hint for its care was the silver badge pinned to his collar, a gleamingly polished ring around the wide-branched image of Bardon, and at the tree's center, a pair of sapphires winked as richly blue as the glacier-fed lake they'd looked on with Robert. From his tight-trimmed hair to the not-heavy laces of his boots, he gave off an air of almost willful disrepair, like it offended him to have to concern himself with anything as trivial as how he made himself not naked. Dante was thrilled in a way he couldn't explain. The man was 30 years old at the utmost, and at the clear peak of his life. Wholly vital, but in no way boyish. And when Dante summed him up, it was like looking on the man he could become if he grew into himself without flaw or injury.
"You aren't kidding,"
the man who must be Larimore said, eyebrows raised at Paul. Paul nodded, eyes still fixed rigidly across the room. The man turned to Dante and spoke in a quick tone that nearly sounded bored.
"I am indeed Larimore, the Hand of Samarand, and as an acolyte of our order you will address me with the respect my station is due."
"So you've seen reason," Dante managed, thrown by the man's use of the word acolyte. He hadn't known what to expect. This plan, like their plan for when they'd first come to Narashtivik, had been built on the desperate premise they'd show up with a goal in mind and let no resistance stop them from reaching it. But at his most optimistic, he hadn't expected such ready acceptance.
"Did you really slay Will Palamar?" Larimore said, tilting his head. "I smote him down with a column of flame."
"Wonderful," Larimore said. "Nack, how would you feel about a move?"
"A move, sir?"
"Across the street. The boy will need a teacher. He hasn't slapped you around. I assume that means he likes you."
He raised an eyebrow at Dante, and Dante nodded.
"Well?"
Nack drew back his chins.
"I'd be honored for the chance."
"Then it's settled." Larimore nodded to the guards. "Take them to the chapel. Clear a cell for Nack and one for Dante. Throw out some of the monks if you have to."
"Blaze comes with me too," Dante said, struggling to keep up with all that was happening.
"Only men of the cloth may live within the chapel," Larimore said.
Dante set his jaw. "He is my hand as you are Samaran's."
"Well, I do set the rules," Larimore said, rubbing his throat. "I suppose no one can say anything if I'm the one who breaks them."
He jerked his head at the two armsmen.
"By your will,"
one guard said through his beard.
He gestured toward the door.
Dante took the lead, Blaze and Knack moving to flank him. The second guard moved towards the head of their sudden formation. Their footsteps echoed through the vast emptiness of the cathedral. Dante and Blaze exchanged another look, all but jogging to keep up. The lead guard held the front door, and they broke into the overcast afternoon of the square. Across the way, the castle gate stood open. Motionless pikemen lined the walls that led inside. They walked across the square, and the shadow of the gate's thick stone cooled their faces as they crossed from Narashtovik to the separate city of the sealed citadel. A small squad of guards drilled in close order in the yards. A minor market lined the wall to the right of the main gates, peopled by keepers that spoke in normal tones with the men who handled and haggled for their wares. The clink of smithies underlined the modest chatter of the market, and the barked orders of the soldiers. Directly ahead, the keep jutted straight up from the ground, shorter than the church on the other side of the square, but an immense thing in its own right. A powerful block of dun stone and pure strength, like a titan's front tooth sewn in the earth. Dante's eyes tracked up its neck-bending height.
"I haven't been in here in a while," Knack said, pleased.
One of the guards gave him a bored look. Behind them came the clank of chains lowering the grill and pulling closed the reinforced wooden gates. Before they reached the keep, they heard the boom of tons of iron-hard wood clapping together. The guards escorting them wasted no time taking them to a small but ornate chapel that leaned against the outer wall of the keep. Its main hall, perhaps 30 feet by 20, felt toyish in comparison to the cathedral they'd so recently left. One guard led them to the cells at the chapel's rear, while the other pulled one of the curious monks aside to confer about quarters.
"Don't leave this room," one of the guards said, once the monk had shown him to an empty cell.
He ushered the boys inside.
"Someone will see to you in time."
"Goodbye for the moment," Knack said, offering a wave.
"See we're not kept long," Dante said, "and bring us some food."
The guard's mouth twitched. He nodded to the monk, and they walked on down the hallway. Blaze waited for their footfalls to recede, then closed the door and pressed his back against it, palms spread wide across the wood.
"Lyle's parboiled guts," he said, gazing stupidly at Dante, lower lip tucked between his teeth. "Did what I think just happened actually happen?"
Dante sat down on the cell's feather pallet. When they brought in another for Blaze, there would hardly be room to walk around. Dazedly, he pinched the bridge of his nose until his eyes watered. The last half hour had felt like a completely different life than that of the prior week.
"Ow," he said. "I think it's real."
"Well, what now?"
"I don't have the faintest idea,"
Dante said, rubbing his finger below his nose.
"Really, I didn't want to think about what would happen after we threw the book at them."
Blaze nodded, still grinning.
"Let's try not to get killed."
"I promise nothing."
He leaned back, gazed up into the timbers of the ceiling. He felt as if he could rip the roof down with a look. Why hadn't he been like this before? Why hadn't he known that what he was depended on no more than what he willed himself to be?
It was there. It was all there. Everything he'd wanted collected within the walls of this simple temple. Copies of the cycle, references and interpretations, versions with the final third translated into Malish.
He reached toward the shelf of the chapel library and heard Knack, who'd been sent back to their room an hour later to settle them in and show them around, say something about reading it in the original.
Dante slid free a Malish translation and sat down in the strong sunlight of the south-facing reading room, glad to be off his feet, which had felt swimmy beneath him.
He hadn't realized just how long he'd been kept from finishing the cycle, just how much its version of the world had come to underpin his own.
"Much simpler than your idiotic mishmash," Nak was saying.
"What?"
"The grammar. Unlike your tongue, if it can be so called, ours actually follows rules."
Nak scowled at him as Dante leafed through his book.
"Certain subtleties are lost in the translation. Besides, you sound like a barbarian. You're in Gask now."
"Tomorrow," Dante waved.
"I've been charged with your instruction," Nak said, slipping his hand beneath its cover and folding it closed. "And if the remainder of the cycle of Aron is still beyond you, I need you reading at least as well as a child before I can direct you through the rest."
"I said tomorrow." Dante swung his feet, sucking air through his nose. "I'll be your student then. I'll be as diligent as the course of the sun. I just need this one day with what's eluded me for so long." Nak ran a finger around his flabby jaw, then nodded.
"Very well. This day is yours. Tomorrow is mine."
It was a translation, and for that he was wary. But the difference between the cycle's first sections and that final third were too clear to be caused by the liberties of any scribe. It felt older, primal. They were the words not only of a different man, but of a different race of men. A men whose waking thoughts were just as much a dream as the hours they spent in sleep. As Dante read the same basic story that had begun the cycle, he felt as if he'd found a chord between himself and the deepest, purest knowledge of that first and brightest spark of man. That at last, the riotous chaos of civilization might be put into some kind of sense. "In the days before day, in the nights before night, all things swirled, all things mixed with another. The waves broke, but there was no shore. The foam foamed without light to see its crest on the waters. Great Aron and Tame fought the serpents and the dragons of the stormy north, and roiled the water with their struggle. Aron's great mill cracked and fell. The bodies rolled on the surface, scale and claw, eye and tooth, and from their spines Tame grasped them and formed them into the shores and the peaks. He plucked their knuckles and set them to the islands, and Aron split the first sky from the second sky, where he left to grant the measure." "And what of man?" Carvajal said. "And from the blood of the serpents and the blood of his own shining wounds, Tame packed them into the mud where the river met the banks. The wind filled their lungs, and they stood and saw what Tame had made."
"To the men he gave the earth, and he made the sun to warm them and coax the seeds of plant and babe. To the heavens Aron forged the thrones of the gods, and he planted the stars of his law."
Carvajal left his seat, he left his house, and found the northern fire where once a dragon watched its waters. He cupped that starlight in his hands, and bore it down to minds of men. He showed them where the two rivers rose into the skies.
"And so Tame cursed men to wither and return to mud. Aron cried out. He cried to see the men so used. He took their dust and ground it in his mill, where he ground the grist that fed all things. And there the wind would carry the last breath of men, where it would take them to the black fields. Again they would mix with all that once had been."
But Aron's mill was cracked. It had broken in the struggle with the North Laird dragon. It had fallen when that dragon fell and cracked upon the earth. And when it ground again, this broken mill, it ground no more of stars and plenty. The stars had shifted. Now strife was ground with man.
"What?" Blaze said,
and Dante realized he'd been laughing. I just read how the gods made the world. You mean like you could have done in any temple back in Brussels? Their story is like this one's shadow, Dante said. His shoulders felt like hilltops, his fists like boulders. We didn't make the world a terrible place, like the priests of Tame say. The gods did. Blaze grunted. I thought you didn't believe in the gods. I don't. But maybe they just died a long time ago, and this is what they did before they went away. His smile fell as Blaze continued to watch him. Did he suspect it? The second layer of the plan that had gotten them inside? That the only way Dante could think to get close enough to Samaran to kill her would also take him to the one place he knew would have a cycle he could read. It wasn't that Dante had lied. He'd gotten them inside the sealed citadel, meant to learn its layout well enough to figure out how they could murder her and then escape back to the south. That hadn't changed. But neither had his other need. He could do both. Learning the cycle's last secrets could only help him when it came time to snuff Samaran's candle. If suspicion tickled Blaze's mind, let him hold his guesses. Dante had been the one who'd gotten them through the gates. He read on. He heard Blaze's boots knocking around the confines of the chapel, the whisper of pages as the boy pored through the monk's stash of romances, presumably in search of saucy pictures. Then more footsteps, and the close of the front door. Dante read without cease, lighting a candle once he realized he'd been squinting into dusklight for the last half hour. He read without pausing to take down all the names or map out all the places, like he'd done when he'd started the book. That would come later. For now, he had this one night to read it through, and when he turned its last page a couple hours before dawn, he felt the breath stir in his lungs, the blood in his veins. He felt elevated, touched by a mood of lightness and wholeness. From that vantage, his worries and doubts looked like malborn vermin, things he could pick up and snap into two dead halves. He closed his eyes, pressed his palms together, felt the fiber of the shadows mingle with the flesh of his self, felt it pour into the empty places in his body, in his skin, in his blood, in his hair and eyes and heart, felt his own position as an extension of the eternal burn of the stars. He opened his eyes, and the world was changed. He was a part of it, and it a part of him. And he knew that when he died, it would mean no more than a retreat from the isolation of this body back into the blood-warm swell of Nether. Dante woke the next morning the same way he always had, confused, vaguely angry, already weary toward whatever the next hours would bring, in a way he thought unfair for any 16-year-old to feel. And it was a while before he remembered he should feel any different. But sleep had robbed him of that elevation he'd had on finishing the book, that sense of oneness and rightness. Like if he had to die, it would be all right if it just came then. He had its memory, though, the thirsty knowledge it was possible to feel that way, for however brief a time, and instead of feeling cheated, he lay beneath his blanket in a mood of deep removal, not at peace, but too far from his worries to be hurt by them, and passed an hour coldly dissecting the facts of his life until Knack knocked on his door. Get teaching, Dante said once he'd let him in. Oh, so it turns out you've still got things to learn, Knack said, and in the mental coldness that hadn't quite left him, Dante could tell Knack's jest wasn't meant to run him down, but came from a sense of admiration the monk could never voice in plain words. I finished the cycle, he said. And? It felt like I'd been lifted to the moon, Dante said. He frowned. That wasn't right.
It was incomplete, at least.
It felt like a foundation. Now it's time to quarry more blocks and keep building my tower.
Ah, Nak breathed. You felt the touch of Aron.
Perhaps, Dante said, not because he thought it might be true, but because he found he didn't care how Nak wanted to classify it.
Nak scratched his bald pate and led Dante to the reading room. A spread of sparsely worded primers lay in the soft winter sunlight on the desk. Dante picked one up, felt the last of his clear-eyed coldness seep away.
These look like they're made for children. And unfortunately, you know less than a child, Nak said. But they're as simple as we have.
Nak stepped him through the Narashtivik alphabet, which was nearly identical to Malish but lacking three letters, and the subtleties of its pronunciation, which, unlike the Malish stew, was regular and orderly as the board of a game of cotters, and which Nak claimed was close enough to Gascon to sound like no more than a regional accent. He made Dante write it out five times, then speak each letter five more. He drilled Dante on the verb conjugations of Narashtivik and its relation to modern Gascon. He showed him the structure of its grammar in simple sentences, taught him a handful of words, the precise laws of how a verb cycled through the tenses of the present, the past, the future, the subjunctive. He bade Dante write out a dozen verbs through each of their forms, and left on some monkish errand.
Busy work, Dante thought, and far too much to take in at once.
That Nak wanted him to learn through rote memorization struck him as an insult. He did it anyway, writing out Nak's precise little tables. Nak returned and nodded at his work, correcting his past pluralizations, then went over it all again before leaving the boy with pages of hand-prepared vocabulary to study through the evening. The next day, he had Dante write out maddeningly simple sentences about cats chasing balls and boys throwing sticks. The next day was the same, but working in the other tenses, repeating and repeating until Nak was satisfied what he'd taught had stuck.
"When are we going to read something real?" Dante asked as Nak prepared to leave him once again.
"Once we've laid a few blocks on your foundation."
Dante rolled his eyes and turned back to his list of words.
"Learning much?" Blaze asked him when he came back to their cell for the night.
"Conjugates," Dante said, staring at the shadows on the ceiling.
"How do you say to murder?"
"Natus," Dante said.
He lifted his head, stared at Blaze.
"We knew this wouldn't work overnight. They have to learn to trust me before I'll be able to get close."
Blaze shook his head at the cold night and silent yard past the cell's small window.
"There's a world outside this keep." "Give it time," Dante said. "I haven't forgotten why we're here. You just keep your eyes open while we wait for something to happen."
Their wait didn't last long. Nak bent over Dante's latest lesson, following his sentences with the sharp tip of his pen, striking out words and muttering corrections, when the door banged open and slammed against the wall, shuddering to a stop.
"Knuckles possess a great facility for knocking," Nak said.
He looked up and his teeth clacked shut.
My lord?"
"The boy," Larimore said, beckoning with a single flick of his finger. Three guards crowded in behind him.
"I have a name," Dante said. "That will only be an issue if we decide you're worthy of a tombstone."
Samarin's hand nodded to the guards. They grabbed Dante by the elbows and dragged him toward the door. The bluster he'd come at them with back at the cathedral, and ever since, crumpled into nothing. He could only gape at Nak, plead dumbly for help from the middle-aged monk.
Nak tapped his fingers together. "May I ask?"
"Their cycle is a fake," Larimore said, running his tongue along his teeth.
Ah, Nak said. Upsetting.
Larimore ignored him, turning on his heel. The guards hauled Dante out the door and out the chapel. He struggled to keep his feet, toes scraping the stone yard. Blaze shouted from behind them. Dante winked at him and tried not to throw up.
I have legs, he said,
boots scuffing through the dirt.
For now, Larimore said.
I don't know what this is about.
He wriggled his shoulders, twisting his body to find a way to meet Larimore's eyes.
Do you hear me?
Larimore looked down at him, face impassive, then reached out and flicked Dante's nose hard enough to make his eyes water. They carried him up the steps and inside the keep, through its airy entrance and down a hall adorned by tapestries of Aron and his deeds, by grey-bearded men hoisting pennants and flags over their foes. The guard slowed enough to let him catch his feet as they reached a stairwell that descended to a cool, well-lit subfloor. Larimore took out a heavy iron key and opened the second door they reached. Dante was yanked through the doorway and heaved into a heap on the plain stone floor. Other than a single lantern by the door, the room was empty, chilly, hard rock with dust on every surface. The armsman moved to either side of the door. Larimore shut it and folded his arms behind his back, regarding Dante for a long minute. Dante tucked his feet beneath him and clasped his hands in his lap. Without changing his expression, Larimore lashed out and booted him in the ribs.
Cut that pious crap. There's no priests here.
Dante had fallen to his palms, gasping for breath, rage flashing through his skull. Pain rattled up his nerves, but he let his body hurt, knowing it wouldn't kill him.
Tell me why I'm here, he said.
Larimore snorted.
Don't play games. You gave us a copy. I gave you the same book I took from the temple.
Larimore stepped forward and slapped him so the ends of his nails bit into Dante's cheek.
Tell me where the real one is. Now.
Dante made his face twist with anger. It wasn't hard.
How do you know it's a fake?
The man just laughed. Dante's heart shuddered. How did they know he'd given them the copy he'd found in one of the temples in Narashtovik? Had they found the real one? Had they dug it up from where he'd buried it in the yard of the house next to the one he and Blaze had lived in, just inside the city's first wall? But they couldn't have. Otherwise, they'd be busy killing him, not questioning him. He stayed silent.
There are no identical copies, Larimore said.
You idiot.
Like we wouldn't look past the pretty white tree on the cover. Your attempt at deception is outrageous in its stupidity. As if we have no records, no way to check.
He blinked, tightened his jaw.
You gave us a copy. An old one, but a copy nonetheless. It's the same one I found. Maybe you've been chasing the wrong one this whole time.
Where is it? Dante rolled his eyes.
If you're so sure I've got it, why don't you just conjure it out of my pocket, or sniff it out like you did all across Malin?
Because we can't, Larimore snapped, jerking his head back and forth with each syllable.
We're not hounds, and it's not a fox. It can be lost as simply as anything else, including lives.
Then how do you know you weren't chasing a fake?
Larimore lashed out with his boot, aiming for Dante's side. The boy shifted at the last instant, and it struck him in the hip. He sprawled out on the stone. The nether throbbed at the edges of his vision. He panted, glaring up at the other man.
Answer me!
Larimore bared his teeth. He pressed his fist against his brow and shook his head.
We followed you by the blood you left at the temple, he said, leaning forward as if preparing to kick Dante again. We know the book there was the real one. Ergo, you had it. But it's fakes you plant in the temples.
Dante pushed himself back to his knees and glared up at the man.
That's right, I'm versed in your bizarre little scheme.
how you leave out copies where people can find them. Then, if they survive your attacks, you scoop them up and induct them into your order. If they break instead, you toss them away like toy soldiers. And I'm supposed to believe I somehow got my hands on the one true cycle?
Larimore had drawn up short during Dante's speech. His eyes were slit, his voice as low as the floor.
How do you know all that?
You look at me and you see some boy. I've traveled 1,000 miles. I've killed 12 of your men. I've taught myself to work the Nether.
For a moment he forgot his bluster, was taken instead by a curiosity he'd had since Kali told him how they used the book.
Why do you leave it out like that? Why do you recruit people that way? Why so complicated?
Because it works, Larimore said.
He stood in place a moment, face frozen as he stared at Dante.
Men like you are as rare as a monk that isn't fat. Do you know how few people can work the Nether? We need as many of them as we can find. Their strength's the only thing keeping us from being crushed.
He continued to stare, like he'd forgotten this was an interrogation.
You're a strange one. I just want to learn. You still can. Just tell me where it is.
I don't know, Dante said, though he knew the man wasn't lying, that they would still take him back if only he told them where to find the book.
Enough. More than enough.
Larimore crouched down in front of Dante, eyes bright and hard. Again Dante had the sense he could become this man, cunning as the animal mind of a drunk, open-eyed enough to seize the unexpected and turn it to his advantage before it could be turned against him, with a will so swift and sharp he could trust its quickest instincts to lead him where he wanted. That was the difference between them, Dante thought. Dante knew what he wanted, had the same ability to adapt rather than be caught flat-footed by the false assumption of a rigid mentality. But he didn't know how to act, or didn't trust his impulses to make his desires fact. The burn in Larimore's eyes told him the man hadn't yet made up his mind to kill him, that there was a way to convince him he didn't have the book and still be kept as a student of the Order.
Yet Dante's only plan since he'd found the extra copy of the cycle in the garbage of one of their old temples after Samaran's sermon was one of scorn and contempt, a whirlwind of arrogance meant to keep them so far back on their heels they wouldn't have the wits to question anything he said. It had worked till now, till they looked closely at the prize he'd tossed at their feet. And now he was snared.
Bluster and violence were all he knew. He didn't know how to convince Larimore of a lie. They had him. This was their castle, their city, their army of men guarding its gates, their troop of priests hoarding its lore. If he'd been something more, he could have talked his way out. Instead, he had no more than this one simple lie.
I don't know where it is.
The boring part, then, Larimore said, almost sadly. Torture. I think we'll start with Blaze.
He's got nothing to do with this.
Of course he doesn't.
Then why him? Why not me?
Because he'll get to you better than if we put you in the boots.
Don't, Dante said.
He knew Blaze would die before he gave up their secrets. He was stupid that way.
You're a reasonable man. Why don't you just believe me?
Because you're lying, Larimore sighed.
He got up, knees popping, and nodded at the guards. One opened the door.
Wait, Dante said.
He swallowed back his nausea.
What about the prophecy?
Larimore paused at the door, face unreadable.
Which prophecy might that be? The one from the cycle.
It's a big book, Larimore said, dropping his hand from the doorframe.
The South shall bear the child of flame, Dante intoned, quoting the passage he'd found in the last pages of that final third, the close of which he'd read every night since. With bleeding hands and bleeding blade. In Milstar's skies he'll write his name, and brother's treason be unmade.
Rubbish. Just like all poetry.
I came from the South.
Everyone's from the South, Larimore said.
There's nothing north of here but piles of rock, and farmers too stupid to know you can't squeeze wheat from stone.
Dante held up his hands, showed the scars of all the times he'd cut his hands to feed the Nether's hungry mouths.
And these?
Every priest of worth has those. Or on the backs of his hands, or on his forearm, or his forehead if he's given to theatrics.
Dante folded his hands in his lap. Other than attacking the man and his guards outright, it had been his last play. He might be able to kill them. He might even be able to get to Blaze before the rest of the Citadel knew what was happening. He wouldn't be able to get them out, though, and would never be able to kill her. It would all be for failure. Tears stung his eyes, and he closed them. He couldn't give up the book either. He didn't know why, just that it was too important.
Could tip the balance so far that even Samaran's death wouldn't be enough to cease their aggression.
He would do nothing then. He wouldn't break. The least he could do was keep his silence until they stole his very voice.
Stonewalling, he heard Larimore mutter. Delusions of destiny don't impress me.
Your only coin's the book. If Blaze doesn't give it up, we'll be back for you soon enough.
Dante snapped open his eyes and fixed them on Larimore.
If I'm so unimportant, why are you doing everything you can not to hurt me?
You're overlooking the possibility that's a measure of my own stupidity rather than a measure of your own worth.
Larimore smiled, then remembered himself. Wait here, he joked.
He gestured to the guards, and they stepped outside.
What will Samaranth do when she finds you've murdered the keystone of her desire?
Dante shouted after them. He heard them speak in Gascon to each other. Then the door clunked shut. A lock snapped into place, and the hallway went silent. Dante stood, wincing at his rib and hip, brushed dust from his trousers. Other than himself, the dust and the lantern flickering by the door, the room was completely empty. At least it was clean. He felt calm, somehow, as if his few minutes with Larimore had spent all his available emotion. Feeling stupid, he tried the door and was almost glad that it didn't budge. He had nothing in his pockets but some of Nack's papers and his torchstone. He sat back down in the middle of the room. Had anyone ever learned to teleport themselves? What was the point of all he'd learned if he couldn't use it to escape a simple dungeon? He could probably blast down the door, he thought. Murder the guards Larimore would have posted outside. Still, anything drastic depended on being certain they were going to kill him, or Blaze, or both. And he had the odd conviction that wasn't the case. He'd planted the seed of doubt with Larimore, thrown him with that crazy scripture of prophecy, if only by a little. Larimore didn't strike him as the kind of man who put too much stock in anything. Likely why Samaranth had taken him as her captain. But he was the captain. And if he was off consulting with anyone, it would be her. As the holiest of their order, perhaps she would put a little more weight in the possibility of Dante's importance.
He'd wait and see, then. Doing anything rash would ruin both their chance to assassinate Samaranth and his ability to learn the Nether through the structured instruction of this place, rather than through whatever fragments he could scrape together on his own. They'd decide either to kill him or use him. He wouldn't act until he knew which.
Time went by. Without a window in the sky, he had no way to tell how much. He conjugated irregular verbs for a while. He killed some time holding his breath for as long as he could, then waited for his gasps to subside, and tried it again. He made a methodic sweep of the room, poking every stone up to the 8-foot ceiling, tapping his toe against every block in the floor. None were false or loose. He hadn't expected they would be, but he liked to think someone who'd shared this room before him had made an effort to escape rather than let himself rot, clapped up, and forgotten. It wasn't until he could no longer forestall urinating that he grew angry. There were no buckets, no holes in the floor. They hadn't exactly forgotten about him in a few hours either. It was deliberate. They wanted to reduce him to an animal, degrade his pride. He did his business in a corner and laid down on the other side of the room, breathing through his mouth. After a while, he even slept. Dante woke to pitch darkness. He jerked upright, flinching, as if he expected to bang his head. The lantern had gone out. He groped for the near wall, leaning forward until his fingers brushed stone. He let himself wake up for a minute, torch stone in his pocket. He cocked his head, listened for the scrabbles of rats or anything else lurking in the blindness. There was no need for light. The room was practically a complete seal. Darkness couldn't hurt him. For a while longer, he sat there, listening to himself breathe. Maybe it was a good thing he was still locked up. Maybe that meant they had lots of things to talk about. His stomach gurgled. He had no way to know how long he'd slept, but from his stomach, insistent but not yet pained, he guessed it had been some 12 hours since he'd eaten lunch, shortly before they'd dragged him here. He sucked on his fingers, straining his eyes against the inky darkness. He stilled his mind. A coldness like exposing wet skin to a breeze crept over his hands. He thought on the nature of the shadow sphere, the all but solid substance of its delumination, a deeper blackness even than that of this room. He bent his mind to define the sphere by what it wasn't, by its unduck-like properties. He laughed through his nose, and as his breath touched his palm, he could see the creases of his skin, white and illusory as a flash of pain. It winked out at his surprise, and he cast back out for its feeling, gathering it in like rope onto a pier. First a spot, and then he saw his hand, his wrist. It expanded over his arm, the dust on his knees, and the smooth stone floor. He stood slowly, willing the light to grow. His line of sight bubbled outward until all the room was lit in ghostly white. It had been so simple. What else could he do if he took the time to think about it? Metal scraped on metal, on the far side of the door. Dante started. The bolt clicked. He swept his thoughts clean and popped back into darkness in time for the light of the hall to spill into his chamber as the door swung open. "Still alive?" Larrimore called. He walked inside, glancing idly to either side of the door, then saw Dante standing half in shadow at the far side of the room. Larrimore was silhouetted, his face unreadable. "Stinks in here." "That's what happens when you treat a man worse than you'd care for your stock," Dante said. "At least it hasn't dulled your tongue." "How's Blaze?" "Untouched, despite my best counsel, and his brilliant plan to try to brawl his way to wherever we might have you," Larrimore said. He raised a dark hand to his face. "How would you like to see Samarand?" Dante snorted.
Do I have a say?
Of course not.